Welcome to episode 15 of Girl Take the Lead, where each week we explore womanhood and leadership. Before we get started today, I wanted to give a shout out to two of our listeners, Mary Gottenborg and Mary McAvoy. Thank you, Marys, for your support and listening to our podcast. Also, in episode 14, I said I'd mention, give a shout out to anyone who donates to the Mother's Day movement or is a mom or an incredible woman. So I would also like to give a shout out to Catherine Mean, Rachel Blair, Whitney Baker, Misha McKittrick, Rachel Broomberger, Melissa Brunetti, Emma Canny, Kiki Canny, Dee Dee Ciancio, and Linda Crandall. Thank you, ladies, for being incredible inspirations. Today, Sheila Whitescorn, another incredible woman and intuitive life coach, joins me for this episode where we'll take a closer look at Brené Brown's book, Atlas of the Heart, and how certain emotions she researched relate to leadership. We're going to do this as a three-part series, and this first part is about the emotions of empathy and compassion. We sure hope you'll enjoy it. So welcome, Sheila Whitescorn. You know that I love you to the moon and back, and I'm just so excited that we're going to take this series, this journey together on emotions, and it's going to allow us to dig in a little bit and relate it to our experiences, especially around leadership. And so we're going to have some fun with that. And for our listeners, you kind of want to introduce yourself, Sheila, so that they know who you are.
Sure. Well, I am so delighted to be with you, Yolanda. My name is Sheila Whitescorn, and I'm an intuitive life coach. I live in the Bay Area, and I recently did a career pivot about a year ago and decided to leave corporate life behind and start my own coaching business.
And for the listeners, Sheila and I worked together for about 8 years because we started in this same organization, I think within months of each other. And there was an instant camaraderie. We shared a cube wall and saw life very similarly. And the universe was really good to us by bringing us to each other. So listeners, what we're doing is, you know, Brené Brown is so magical. And this book, this latest book for her, Atlas of the Heart, was one that Sheila and I looked at and we went, oh man, this is so good. And we need to look at it and relate it to leadership. And because the obvious thing for us was that some of these emotions just lend themselves more to leadership. So our first episode here, and we're going to probably have a three-part series, is about empathy and compassion. And one of the things that Brené Brown says is that if you identify the biggest barriers to developing brave leaders or cultivating courage in our families or bringing justice to community, I'd go right back to what I believed was true when I was a kid. People will do almost anything to not feel pain, including causing pain and abusing power. Very few people can handle being accountable without rationalizing, blaming, or shutting down. And without understanding how our feelings, thoughts, and behaviors work together, it's almost impossible to find our way back to ourselves and each other. When we don't understand how our emotions shape our thoughts and decisions, we become almost disembodied from our own experiences and disconnect from each other. So when I saw that, I went, oh man, boy, how much more powerful you could be as a leader, right? If you could connect.
Absolutely.
You know, compassionate leadership, for example, how do we connect? How do we guide leaders who are in that situation now? What's it look like? And I know that, you know, Sheila has always said to me, you know, we have to understand who we are. one of the things that we can look at is, you know, when we talk about our emotions, you know, why they're so important, like connection, like what does that mean to us? And what could it mean to leaders? So she defines in the book connection to be the energy that exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued, when they can give and receive without judgment, and when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship. And those of you that might have the book, it's on page 255. But I think, I don't think that's included in training manuals or anything, right, Sheila? I mean, we look about how we've been trained in organizations.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, that's what everybody wants. And sometimes leaders are in positions where, you know, they have a lot on their plate. There's not a lot of free time to be interacting with their teams necessarily. And, you know, their team members, you know, may be needing things from them that they're not able to provide. And so the more self-aware that one is, they can, you know, take the time to check in and make sure that they're showing up and being present and helping their team members feel seen, heard.
Right. I think also too, there's, Brené Brown says, you know, the basic premise is that she used the quote from Tomasio. We think we're thinking machines. We don't pay attention to emotions, and we're taught that they get in the way. We process emotional pain the same, but the thing she points to is that we process emotional pain the way, same way as we do physical pain. So if that's happening, mm-hmm. you know, just in general, and then you're put in a leadership position, the last thing you're going to want to do is, you know, you don't have the time for anything to get in the way. Right. Yeah. It also was interesting too, her research, right, that when she talked to 7,000 people, that three came up happy, sad, and pissed off.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. And I think she said her research yielded 75 emotions and experiences. So, you know, she covers a lot of those in the book, and she had her HBO Max special recently. If anybody wants to check that out, I think she covers 30 in that one. You know, she makes the point that human emotions and experiences are layers of biology, biography, behavior, and backstory. And that probably because of that, each of us has our own way of processing emotions, getting emotions. And I just love that she made this huge point that we cannot read emotions in other people. So if you're a leader of a team and you're noticing the biology of somebody is totally shutting down,
mm-hmm.
or they're not talking, or you can't assume you know what's going on for that person. You have to ask questions and take the time to work with them to see what could be going on.
Mm-hmm.
I probably have had a few leaders that have done that with me, but they're the exception.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that depending on the culture of the organization, some leaders, you know, they avoid that position. They don't really want to get involved because of all of the other priorities that are taking place.
Recently, Sheila found this quote from Susan David, PhD, and she says, emotional agility is the new currency for leading successfully. And so I wonder what emotional agility might mean. Do you have some thoughts on that, Sheila? Like what she might be meaning by emotional agility?
To me, it seems like it's similar to compassionate leadership. Mm-hmm. Some of the same criteria. I really think that, you know, being able to, for a leader to be self-aware and to know the difference between, you know, sympathy and empathy and compassion, and to really be able to effectively communicate their feelings or their thoughts with their team members, and to be willing to be vulnerable with them in order to get to the root of whatever it is that's going on, you know, in the work setting.
If we look at compassion, Brené Brown made the point that compassion is fueled by understanding and accepting that we're all made of strength and struggle. No one is immune to pain or suffering. Compassion is not a practice of better than or I can fix you. It's a practice based in the beauty and pain of shared humanity. Just love her words. She does that so well. And empathy, she says, is the most powerful tool of compassion. It's an emotional skill set that allows us to understand what someone is experiencing and to reflect back that understanding. So compassion is a daily practice and empathy is a skill set.
Yes, it's like building a muscle.
In one of the posts I think you sent me from Susan David, it was a sympathy, she used sympathy as well as an example. I'm sorry you're in pain. Where empathy is, I can imagine what this pain feels like for you. And then compassion, you are suffering and I will do what I can to help. So that's how she made the distinctions. One being sympathy being a distant thing.
Mm-hmm.
Empathy being a shared thing. And then compassion being a connection and something with regard to action.
Yeah, I like that. One thing that I wanted to share that really resonated with me was that quote that Brené talks about language and emotions. And she says, language is our portal to meaning, making, connection, healing, learning, and self-awareness. Without accurate language, we struggle to get the help we need. We don't always regulate or manage our emotions and experiences in a way that allows us to move through them productively, and our self-awareness is diminished. Language shows us that naming an experience doesn't give the experience more power. It gives the power of understanding and meaning.
You know, I hadn't really realized before reading the book, I hadn't really given emotions much thought. You know, I knew I kind of wear my heart on my sleeve and I'm a pretty emotional person and blah, blah, blah. But I found by using language more precisely, I could begin to see how different action was, you know, or what different actions I could take. Mm-hmm. Things that I didn't realize about myself, you know, like you think you're being compassionate and you're actually being sympathetic. You're not connecting. You're actually distancing yourself from the person, and you think that you're actually doing the opposite. That was pretty mind opening.
That's what I also felt that the docuseries on HBO Max was another way. Like, even if you've read the book, it really complemented the book. It was like nice to see some of the role playing that was taking place during the docuseries. so that even though the book itself is written in a different style, it's, you know, obviously backed by research, but the book has a lot of storytelling aspects to it, which I really liked. But the docuseries, if anyone hasn't seen it yet, it is definitely worth watching.
Yeah. And she brings in so much visual context, you know, with movies and the way she likes to teach. Mm-hmm. And you feel what it's not just hearing the words or reading the words in a book. It's actually being able to see something visual that you go, oh, yes, I understand what that means now, because you see it so well portrayed in a movie.
Yeah, I thought that that was really interesting too, because knowing that she's written a lot of other books that are heavily based on research, even though the content in her other books is really interesting, you know, some could find it somewhat dry to read. And what I felt was so refreshing about the way she wrote Atlas of the Heart was it was written in more of a storytelling format. And that way it really can kind of sink in and be more engaging and people can really relate to it better. It kind of breaks down the barriers that right. people might have.
I think also too, in Atlas, I mean, she always does write from her own perspective and her own story, but some of the stories in Atlas were great, right? Yeah. Her swimming, you know, when she gets competitive with the person in the lane next to her, no, regardless of age. I mean, there was just so much you could relate to. I mean, competition is certainly something down the road we'll talk about, but it was uncovering so much of her own humanity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right?
And she used, I think the quote from the American Buddhist nun, Pema Chodron, you know, and, you know, that, and it ends kind of like compassion becomes real when we recognize our shared humanity. And I think the book and the special actually remind us, you know, we're all in this together. We're all discovering. Sometimes leaders think that they're supposed to know how to do all of this, right? That you get into the job and you're given some training and okay, you're done. Now go do it. And, you know, it's, if you look at it as self-discovery and who you are, and that's what you're bringing to the team and to the humanity of your team, you know, it lightens everything up. You don't have to be the expert. I love this part because you see quotes everywhere about walking in someone else's shoes. And she said, we need to dispel the myth that empathy is walking in someone else's shoes. Rather than walking in your shoes, I need to learn how to listen to the story you tell about what it's like in your shoes and believe you, even when it doesn't match my experiences. Wow.
That is really... That's so important.
Yeah, because she wrote, when we don't believe, it means that it's too much of what you believe in threatens what I believe in. And how many times in our own lives have we heard somebody tell us something and we don't believe it? That's really amazing too.
Mm-hmm.
To suspend our own belief and accept that what someone else has said is true for them, you know, it's mm-hmm. like, so one of the things, and you talked about it just a moment ago, are an area where she talks about misses, right? Like where we're looking at sympathy versus empathy and different areas. And I thought these were so good because she's got such a good way of putting this out there. So like, here's the miss on sympathy versus empathy. Oh, you poor thing. And bless your heart. You know, I feel so sorry for you. That was really a good one too, right? How many people, you know, just, and you think you're being compassionate, but you're actually creating distance. Also too, I guess she talks, another example of, you know, she, especially in the HBO Max where they're role playing and someone comes to her and says, you know, I just had a talk with my boss about XYZ and it didn't go well. And her response back was something like, what were you thinking? You know, so, yeah. You know, that's got the blame in there. It's making somebody feel terrible about what they did. There's the blame. How many times do we do sometimes with our, especially with my small kids, you know, think coming back at it like, oh my God, you made me, I didn't realize that I was saying these things because I didn't want to feel bad. You know, I was feeling terrible. So I was like, you have done something that has made me look bad. You know, what were you thinking when you did that? Or the comparing and competing one.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine, listeners, that you have done something and you're sharing it with your best friend about some action you took, and they say to you, oh, that's nothing. Listen to what happened to me when I tried to do that.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes too, as in my parenting, I thought when the kids would come to me with a problem that I didn't want to fix their problem or tell them what to do. So I would always tell them about something that I did that was similar and how I fixed it. And I'm not sure, I mean, I should have checked in now, it's been a lot of years, but whether that actually helped the situation. You know, like sometimes you think you're doing something that will, but you could be almost not believing what they're saying by turning it around or trying to fix it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I can think of some occasions in my own life with my mom and how she handled situations I definitely think that there's an opportunity to learn from these. Especially, I was just thinking about the speaking truth to power. I can't believe you said that to your boss. I can't believe that you went there, that kind of thing, versus that must have been hard. You were really brave. It's hard to stand up for what you believe in. Thank you. That one resonates with me a lot. I like
it. Yeah. Well, it must be too, as a coach, as an intuitive coach, that you're listening that way for people. You mm-hmm. know, you're validating how they're feeling. You're helping them.
Reflecting back feelings. Yeah. There's definitely a lot of unconditional positive regard. You have to be able to set your own feelings down and be completely in the zone with your client And that comes easily for most coaches. At the end of the day, we're all building our emotional intelligence. And I think, you know, when you think about the work setting, some people are highly developed in that area and other leaders are not. So there's just an opportunity for everyone to learn from this docuseries that we're talking about. I think it's a win-win.
I think these examples, you know, the misses almost mm-hmm. give us more insight into the complexity of things, because in our heads, we're thinking we're doing the right thing.
Yes.
Right. Like if it's giving advice, you know, or problem solving, or, you know, especially as my girls have gotten older, it's hard not to give advice, and it's really hard to not try to fix things. You know, you had patterns that were established as children, and now as adults, I'm really have to be aware to change my role, that I'm not the mom that needs to protect them.
Right, right. I understand. You know, that's a big part about being a life coach is, you know, we don't give advice. We're asking questions. You know, the whole idea is that you're supporting your client and asking them a number of questions and having them experience the insight or the aha moment. And, you know, that is something that I'm sure that's hard for me. That was easier for me to do, to be able to do. I think that, you know, other coaches that I trained with, I think they, you know, some of them, that was a challenge. You know, it takes some getting used to. Like I said earlier, that these are all skills that are, it's like building a muscle. You have to kind of practice doing it and being aware and paying attention to what's going on and reading in between the lines. I think another part that is important is about language, you know, going back to how we don't have enough language to describe how we're feeling. And I think that was one of the main points that she was making, how Brené Brown says language shapes the effect and emotion we're feeling. When we mislabel it, it changes our experience of them. And it makes me think about so often how people use different types of emotions interchangeably when they actually have different meanings. For example, happiness and joy are used interchangeably all the time, but yet they're actually different.
Mm-hmm. And stress and overwhelm.
Yes. Yes. So there were many times where I was thinking, this book, this docuseries is so timely right now.
Yeah, I agree. I think, everything comes at the right time when it's supposed to, right? And definitely could feel that there's such a ground swell of support and listening for this, especially mm-hmm. after having gone through, you know, I think we're sensitive creatures right now. We're gone through a pandemic and we're unsure, and we have all of these things going on for us, and they're complex emotions. One of the things that I saw when I tried to take a closer look at emotions was that it just didn't come in one flavor. I found myself kind of down in the dumps, and I was trying to figure out what was going on. And finally, after it took me a couple of days, okay, not fast, but I realized I was experiencing grief, sadness, and one more thing, like it must have been like some kind of stress, But what was sprinkled on top was something like shame. And when I started to see the complexity of it, I went, oh, I see. The emotions we have aren't just one flavor. They can be mixed up.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And that makes them sometimes difficult to talk about or to identify or to, you know, to language, because they come. Now she makes the point that if you don't recognize these things, that they begin to evolve and shape differently if you miscall something. So it could have been that, I know it was envy. That was the third thing I was trying to remember. That if I had identified early on that I was envious, that maybe it wouldn't have morphed into, you know, grief and shame and everything else. But I don't know. I mean, that's just what happened for me, that I could go, oh my gosh, that's what I called it, the cocktail, the emotional cocktail in the moment. And I'm sure our listeners can identify emotional cocktails that they've all had. But that was one that I remember just having this emotional response of, I had no idea. I would have probably just tried to call it something like, you know, jealousy. I probably would have called it jealousy. Mm-hmm. But, you know, she makes the distinction of jealousy versus envy. And I'm like, oh, okay. All right. So it didn't involve another person. It was something that somebody had that had to, okay. So we call that envy. So I can see how we could take these things and apply them, you know, in our lives by practicing.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
And that's why I think, like, for example, I keep going back to the docuseries, but watching the video clips that she picked out, you know, strategically to demonstrate the various emotions was such a brilliant idea.
Right.
Because when you think about, you know, how movies have, you know, brought so much joy and happiness to so many people and have moved them, even if it, you know, with some of those sad movies, we're still moved by it.
Yeah.
We don't even realize what the language is that describes how we feel sometimes. And yet having this book and the docuseries and the terms and the language really helps with that.
Yeah. One of the ones that I remember specifically, Sheila, about that was the one on vulnerability.
Mm-hmm.
There were just such great clips of people saying they loved somebody and then not getting it back.
Yes, that was really powerful.
And I think sometimes in corporate life or any kind of teamwork, where when you're leading, you're so vulnerable. Like you're putting your ideas out, whoever you are, whether you got the title or not, you know, you're hoping that people are going to accept your idea and jump on it and go, oh my God, that's so great. We got to do that. But a lot of times the room just goes silent.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no response. And you just are dying inside. That's vulnerability.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that I think we opened our session with, which is we like to avoid that. We don't want to experience that. We don't want to have that happen to us. And I remember when it was 22 years ago when I started my 12-step program for my food addiction. And because I had never experienced emotions, right? I would always eat and not experience it or push it down, and, you know, got me to about 225 pounds. And as I was coming down in my weight and I was having these experiences, I remember talking to Steve, my husband, and going, what do you do when you get these emotions? If I'm not going to eat, what am I going to do with it? And he looked at me, he goes, honey, they pass through you. Just let them pass. And it was like a novel idea I never thought of. Like, you mean you can just have vulnerability and just not hold a resentment, not get angry that you were vulnerable. You can just experience it and let it go. That was pretty amazing. And it's something, of course, I've never forgotten because I can share it with everybody. But when we can take some of those experiences, like that vulnerability, and not turn it into anger or resentment, or in my case, stuffing it down and eating with it, or trying to medicate it, make it go away, we can get through it faster, I think.
Mm-hmm. I think also this is where compassionate leadership comes into play. With leaders who have the ability to put themselves in other people's shoes and really being able to effectively communicate and have courage to stand by what they believe. And when they have that confidence, they're able to be in a space where they would never allow, ideally, they would never allow someone to be in a room, you know, who has put themselves out there and receive silence. And I think that's where we're going, you know, that's where we're evolving to that place. And so it's very inspiring to be reading about all of this content right now, because the fact that we're having this discussion right now is wonderful.
Yeah, we just started watching Ted Lasso. I'm totally pulled in. And I'm totally pulled in because of his leadership, his empathy, compassion, how he moves with the team. And, you know, we've just about four episodes in, but we're totally hooked. You know, we're binge watching it together, Steve and I
love that. It's a wonderful show.
Yeah. So I think that's definitely one, listeners, if you're not, you can probably all relate to him. I also liked the HBR article that you will try and link to, which said that compassion is the quality of having people, rather having positive intentions and real concern for others. Compassion in leadership creates stronger connections between people. It improves collaboration, raises levels of trust, and enhances loyalty. In addition, studies find that compassionate leaders are perceived as stronger and more competent. Yeah, I think that's so good. I mean, the idea of collaboration and trust with people you work with, and loyalty. It sounds like a dream to me.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's something to work towards, but I bet you there are teams like that. Listeners, if you have a team like that, let us know.
We want to know about it.
Definitely. You know, one thing that always gets me is when somebody is begging for food or money on the street, I think it's good, you know, for us to kind of look at what comes up for us. Is it compassion? Is it sympathy? You know, what is that about? That could be a rich kind of way to look at it. A lot of times I leave guilty because I haven't given anything. Or I had a woman once tell me, I was feeling very generous, and it was like she was looking for money. And so I put a $5 bill in her. And she said, that's not enough. What, what can I can't even buy shampoo for $5.
Yeah. I mean, I think my philosophy is if I decide that I'm going to help someone like that, I have to just let go of the expectations.
Yeah.
I can remember many years ago when I worked in the city, I remember I was helping this woman who, whenever I came up in the morning on from the BART terminal, I would walk up the steps up to the street and she would be standing there. And so I was helping her periodically in different ways, like giving her, you know, little money. And then one time it was very cold out. So I ended up bringing her a hat. Well, I asked her, what do you need? You know, and she said, I'm really cold. And so the next day I bring a hat and I gave it to her and she was very grateful. And then the very next day, I came up the steps and she's wearing a different hat. She's not even wearing the hat I gave her. And I just had a moment where I was like, what am I doing? You know? And Sheila, you just have to let it go. And who knows what she did? She probably traded the hat for a pack of cigarettes. Who knows?
Or she traded your hat for this other hat.
Exactly. And I'm thinking, I just have to let it go.
I think sometimes these situations just help us see more about ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, where we get fearful, where we're courageous, where we're cynical. It's just an insight into who we are, which is what we want to do, right? This is what this is all about. That the more that we know ourselves, the more that we take the time to really explore our emotional set, the better we're going to be as leaders and as people and better listeners for other people. And that's really what we want. So these times of being uncomfortable in these situations are ones where I think, you know, we're just being brought to see something about ourselves and to, as you said, you know, let it go and maybe give it a smile or however it unfolds. It's not our control. I think that's one of the big takeaways too of not controlling the emotion, like let it just be, let them come up, let them. And it's our humanness. It's our humanity. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, is there anything more for this episode, Ms. Sheila, you would like to add?
No.
All right. So thank you for listening to this. And we look forward to our next episode about Atlas of the Heart. We hope you'll join us. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode, and we hope you'll join us again for part 2, where we'll explore the emotions stress, overwhelm, comparison, envy, and jealousy with a little resentment on top. Please let us know what you thought of today's episode by leaving a rating or a comment, and join us at our public Facebook group, Girl Take the Lead. We'd love to have you there. Talk to you later.